All right, we're going to call the Senate Finance meeting to order. Today is March 25th. Time is 9:07. With us today is Co-Chair Kelly, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Olson, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chair Fairclough, and myself, Senator Meyer. So today we are going to take up two bills. I think first let's go ahead and continue discussion on Senate Bill 182. The sponsor is here, Senator Dyson. And then we'll get to House Bill 23, which is the Kinnick Arm Bridge, which we started discussion on that last week. But we did not have time to get to public testimony, so we want to do that today. But let's go ahead and go back to Senate Bill 182. Senator Dyson, welcome. Is there any questions or comments come before the committee before we get started? Okay, seeing and hearing none, then Senator Dyson, Senate Bill 182, we had an introduction to this bill. Yesterday we took public testimony, took committee questions. We received responses to many of the questions, which committee members should have. Is there additional questions that committee members have for the sponsor? Okay. Why don't we, Senator Dyson, give you an opportunity to address any of the questions that you heard yesterday or any of the comments that have occurred since our discussion yesterday. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I appreciate the Department of Administration getting a bunch of the answers the questions was asked. You should have in your packet for today a spreadsheet, looks like this, has the top salaries for in each of the categories. And you can see there's several add-ons that add significant tens of thousands of dollars. And what I'm going to say now is respectful, but a issue in quite a few bargaining units is that seniority rules the day. So the senior members of each of the bargaining units can not only pick the route, but they have first cut at the overtime. And so it produces some disparagement. And the top of the seniority list, fellas, men and women, do very, very well. And the folks that lower down on the seniority don't get a shot or as fair a shot at the overtime. So that produces quite a disparity. And that's something that the bargaining units can solve internally, or folks at the high end can not always take that privilege and give a break to folks lower down. I've got a couple of Coast Guard licenses, and for almost all of them, in order to advance to the next rank on the responsibilities that you're licensed to do, you got to have time doing responsible things the next level up. And so lack of those opportunities for the people down the lower ranks, lower seniority, can be limited. I don't know that that goes on with the Marine Highway System, but it really accounts for some of the significant differences you make. And you all have seen that with teachers, police officers, troopers, so on and so forth. It's just a part of the system. Anyways, be glad to try to answer any of your questions.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dyson, if bill is such a good idea, why wasn't it implemented before in the context that we're dealing with obsolete statutes that are out there?
I can only speculate. Part of it is leadership in the state not willing to take on a tough issue and incur the wrath of these unions or perhaps some of the rest of the labor movement. And maybe it has to do with finding a legislator who would do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Additional questions? Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, it's not for the sponsor, but the sponsor might know. I've received a response from my inquiries from the administration yesterday, and I had asked about annual leave and whether the leave can be brought forward. And so I have the response, and I'm looking at it, but there's something called A days on here, and I don't know what an A day is. So there's quite a few of them.
He's an A day. Welcome, and if you could put your name on the record again, and if you need Senator Faircloth's question repeated, she will. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Nikki Neal. I'm the Director of the Division of Personnel the Director of the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations within the Department of Administration. A days are typically accrued in the Southwest system. And an employee accrues a day of leave for every day worked. When they're not at work, they turn in leave. So they have the ability to be paid 365 days a year. And it's a one-crew system. So I'll let Kate add to that if she has anything additional.
Yes, for the record, my name is Kate Sheehan, and I'm Deputy Director of Labor Relations. So for the A days with the one crew system, you basically work 3 months, 6 months with no break, and then you earn a day of leave for each day worked, and then you could take 6 months straight off. And that's in the Southwest system.
Go ahead, Senator Faircloth.
So that's because of where the boat is traveling, and you can't change crews on and off. Is that the issue?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, yes, they're longer routes. They're the crossing the Gulf routes.
Go ahead, Senator Faircloth.
When you're on then a vessel that is running straight for so many days, and you're accumulating a day of leave, are you also getting overtime then, or is that how you're being compensated?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, it depends. They work 8-hour days, and so they could potentially accrue overtime in addition to the 8-hour days, or to the A days, if they work the additional hours.
If I might, then is it 8 hours with the stipulation of 40 hours a week, so everything after 40 hours until you start a new week is all overtime then? Is it 8 hours a day, then you get overtime, and then when you hit the 40, it's all overtime?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, there's daily overtime, and I don't believe I believe it's all daily overtime. So if they work additional hours that day, then they would get overtime for that day.
Anything else?
And they're accumulating sick leave at the same time and annual leave on top of the day off for every day?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, it depends on the union. So you can see in MEBA, you get A days or personal leave. They don't have annual or sick. For IBU, you get annual or sick or A days. You're not accruing all three under IBU or under MEBA. And then for masters, mates, and pilots, they don't accrue A days. Instead, they receive a lump sum payment in lieu of the A days or a rate.
So since everyone can't see at home, so if you work 1 year for our system, you get 2 weeks leave, 2 to 4 weeks leave, depending on which union you're with. And then if you work to your second year, you get 4 to 6 weeks worth of leave. And if you work 3 years, you get 6 to 8 weeks worth of leave. And if you work a fourth year, you get 8 to 9 weeks of leave. And it continues. It actually holds right around the 8 week. You don't get annual leave and sick leave?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, yes. If you accrue annual leave, you also get sick leave. Those two.
So it's only or on the A days.
Right, or the A days. And of course, these are employees who work either 1 week on, 1 week off, or 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. Some of the marine engineers work 28 days on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Faircloth. Just a question I have. The negotiations with this particular union, how's it going?
Mr. Chairman, we are currently negotiating today with the master's mates and pilots. Unfortunately, we were not able to reach agreement by the 60th day, which was Friday, the 21st, but we continue to negotiate. And we do have some, we've made some progress. We're still pretty far away on some significant things.
Senator Kelly?
What's the significance of the 16th
day? Through the chair, the 60th day, I'm sorry. And that's under statute to have the monetary terms.
I said that.
Okay. Additional questions for these folks? Seeing here none, thank you very much. Senator Dyson, if you could come back, please. I'm just going to convey my frustrations here a little bit. I think, Senator Dyson, it was as it comes to the collective bargaining process, I think that we should negotiate, not legislate, because as we're hearing, there's a lot of different variables that come into play, and you're addressing one of them here, which seems like an issue that needs to be addressed. So I support what you're doing there, but for the most part, I don't like doing this, but. As I mentioned, we have done this before in the past. Nurses overtime comes to mind, which was one that was frustrating to me. That's probably why I remember it. But I'll leave it up to the will of the committee. I'm okay with moving this forward just because I think you are onto something here. You're onto an issue that needs to be addressed. But it's not something that I, as the chairman, necessarily like doing in this process, because I think the collective bargaining process should be separate from this process. But Senator Dyson, go ahead.
Well, I understand, and you have a letter in your file, I think, from the labor expert in the Department of Law, and it's not illegal. But this bill only takes one component of all the issues that is now in statute and therefore not bargainable, and makes them all so they are. And it appears to me that this administration has really faced the impending financial situation they are in. And I can tell you at least three departments that I'm pretty close to are really working the cost problem. And I think that this has come before us as a part of their wanting to work the issues. Just for instance, on the ferries, there's one route that's 8.4 hours, you know, and they are working at trying to get that down to 8 hours for the overtime issue, you know, and very significant cost. But they're, so I've watched their, and I don't know if it applies in that one, but they're watching their tie up, trying to change the docks and so on and so forth so that they can turn the boats around and get them out quicker just to drive down those mandatory personnel costs. And if you've seen the budget for the Marine Highway System, I have a fair amount of experience in this business, and I was startled at the percentage of their costs as personnel costs. I thought, you know, fuel costs and upkeep on the vehicle, vessels and so on and so forth would be a much larger component. But I think that a part of the reason it's before us is this administration really working at cost containment, which is literally the business you all are about quite admirably, I believe.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dyson. Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, just to want to make sure, this basically takes this issue out of statute, but it doesn't prevent it from being negotiated in, correct?
Correct. I suspect that it will be on the basis of the geographic differentials that are basically in place for all the rest of the bargaining units. And so they've been around for a while. Remember when we went through quite a effort to quantify those in some rational way.
Go ahead. One last follow-up. And so the testimony we heard previously, last day or so, If in fact folks are having a difficult time finding qualified people to fill these jobs, you would imagine that during the negotiations process there would be incentives built into the agreements, such as higher salaries. And so in the end, the salaries may be just as high or higher through the negotiations process.
It certainly could be. As you know, every good manager looks at least two things. Am I able to keep the good people I've gotten? And when I have a vacancy, are there people wind up outside the door looking for the jobs? But an internal problem is the folks lower down not being able to get the time it takes to qualify for the next license. And then that would open some of the entry-level positions, I think.
Yeah. And just one last comment through the chair. I think the timing is certainly, it's coincidental or who knows, but I guess my point is removing this from statute I'm not sure how it impacts the negotiations process because there's no cap on salaries. This is not a cause of, this does not create a cap on salaries or a cap on benefits, so that process will still continue. In the end, folks, again, may still be making more money or more bennies. Anyway, I'm done. Thanks.
Very good. Okay, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The concern that I have, I think, is similar to Senator Dunleavy's concern. And I wonder if we are not to have an impact on negotiations, would an effective date, immediate effective date be dropped and have a longer effective date? I wonder what the sponsor would think of that.
Senator Dice.
Of course, I don't know the administration's business and so on. Just like all of us, having a hard date kind of motivates us to get after studying for a test or whatever there is. And I suspect that moving the date back might delay the process. This certainly gives an incentive for people to get it bolted together and flanged up before this bill becomes effective. But that's a judgment call.
But Mr. Chairman, I think I agree with you. We should not be introducing legislation to try to affect or impact negotiations. That process is set in place, and to have interjected a piece of legislation that can sway the negotiations of the bargaining unit, I don't believe is our place.
Okay. Yeah, I think the only thing to keep in mind is it looks like the effective date is to coincide with our fiscal years, and I don't know if we change that, what impact that has for sure, but.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
yeah,
it could be a fiscal year later, 1 year later than what is in the bill.
Okay. Senator Dunleavy?
Just a clarification on what I was thinking. This is what I thought I was thinking. this is what I know I was thinking. I see it's coincidental, but I'm just saying, going through the bill and looking at it, I see it as two different issues. So it's taken out of statute, but does not prevent the ongoing discussions during negotiations as to what the end product is going to be. So I see it as two separate issues, and I'm not as concerned about the effective date.
Yeah. I thought that's what you were thinking, too, Senator. Senator Hoffman thought you were thinking something else. Go ahead, Senator Dyson.
Well, and the bargaining unit has a lot of leverage. This is an essential service, and the state needs it. And for these guys to walk off the job would have a huge impact. And the state has got to bargain, and there's some power on both sides. And there's an arbitration, issue. So there are indeed ways to work out these things.
Okay. Senator Dyson, I guess I'm not convinced we need to change the effective date. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that the administration believes this is very important to get it done. And if that's what it takes to get it done, my guess is that they would say whatever. And I think that they gave in a huge amount here to grandfather in the existing employees. And so all of them will be covered with cold, so it won't be a bargaining issue for them. So for the existing employees, the passing of this bill doesn't change the game for them and the contracts that are in place. It will only be for new employees coming on, which, you know, will be at most a couple of dozen or two or three dozen a year. So I don't think it tilts the process for the existing employees.
Okay, thank you, Senator Dyson. Senator Fairclough, is there any other questions for Senator Dyson? Okay, Senator Fairclough. Yep, we'll go ahead with the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for Senate Bill Number 182, Finance 28-LS1432. Is it the O version? I just want to make sure.
Referee, is it O? All right, we're back. Just want to make sure we had the right committee substitute before us. If you could reread the motion, please.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for Senate Bill Number 182, Finance 28-LS1432/O from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, the bill moves out of committee. We'll take a brief at ease and prepare for the next bill, the Kinnick-Arm Bridge, House Bill 23. Okay, we're bringing Senate Finance back to order. The next bill to hear today is House Bill 23, the Kinnick-Arm Crossing. As I mentioned, we heard this bill March 18th, had a presentation of a committee substitute with the explanation of the changes. And on the 19th, we had questions of various experts and several commissioners and deputy commissioners. So we've heard from the administration, I think, pretty well here, and also addressed the financing aspects of the bill. So today we want to hear from the from the public and what their thoughts are on this project. So we're going to start here in Juneau to give time for folks to get online. Tom Price has signed up to testify. Tom, welcome to the Senate Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Price. I'm with the Alaska Laborers. We represent 6,500 public and private employees within the construction and industry, as well as the blue-collar state employees. We want to be on record in support of the Kinnick Arm project. We believe that it's a valuable piece of transportation infrastructure that will be a great benefit to the state. As you look at trends in the construction industry, as well as various other issues out there, environmental regulations aren't lessening. They're getting more strict. Cost of construction are going up. Demand's increasing. And we believe that the sooner we're able to get this project moving, the cheaper it'll be. And the more land that will be opened up to further development on the other side of the Kinnick Arm in Anchorage. With that, we just encourage your support and consideration. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Tom, questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bryce, as you're now representing the Alaska Laborers Union, like you talked about, I can see why you're in favor of it. Mm-hmm. But let's put on the time back when you had black hair, younger, and were actually a policymaker here in the legislature, and you were in deficit spending back in the late 90s when you were sitting in the House. Would you have had that same opinion if you had not been tied in with the union?
Thank you, Senator Olson. Back in the day when I was much skinnier and a much brighter head of hair and...
Mr. Chairman, if I could just preface it, you have the option of not answering the question. Well. I'm serious, you don't have to answer the
question. No, I think it's a valid issue because you guys are looking at your deficits, in the realm that you are, through the light that you're seeing it. But Senator Kelly and I served in the House at the same time. Senator Hoffman and I served at the House before Senator Kelly came over. And what we were facing then was grape nuts. Well, what you're facing now is more or less grape nuts to what we were facing then. We were looking at $9 a barrel oil, $100 million capital budgets, yet we were still able to buy the Atwood building. Still, we were able to build the Ted Stevens International Airport. And at that time, as a legislator from Fairbanks, I was a very aggressive proponent for the Lynn Canal Highway. Transportation for an such a young state as Alaska is vital for its economic development and its growth. And this is one of those projects that I think that we need to look for. Thank you, though, Senator.
Thanks, Senator Olson. Senator Kelly, did you have?
I just back up what he said. Representative Bryce always supported critical infrastructure projects, even in tough times.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, we're still hoping to build that road to Newham and Bethel yet, so yeah. Well, we're going to have to stay here a little while yet.
Talking about the road to Newham for 100 years.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. All right. I'm going to go off net here as we wait for some of the LIOs to come in. Larry DeBellis, the mayor of Metsu.
Yes, can you hear me?
Sure can. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you for taking my testimony. This is Mayor Larry DeGelbus, mayor of the Metsu Borough. And I do realize you guys are working in a very different financial environment than we were a few years ago, but as we move forward, it's probably not going to get better. And the strategic value of this bridge to both the economic, the regional economic development and the statewide interest is, should not be ignored. This was presented to the Conference of Mayors out in Bethel in 2012, and it's very rare to get the Conference of Mayors to agree on a regional, you know, single project like this, but they did because they saw the value to the state. This is not just about the Mattoon Borough or Anchorage. We have support from the trucking industry that will realize the benefit of not dragging a high percentage of the state's imports through downtown Anchorage and through downtown Wasilla. When you look at the alternative, if we don't do this, we're going to be investing as much or more into widening and upgrading the Glen Highway, which is only going to exacerbate the transportation issues we've got in Wasilla. Our growth is going out west of Wasilla at this point, and everything that grows out that way is concentrating and focusing issues on traffic and transportation and safety that that are already at a breaking point in the Wasilla vicinity. We need to start pulling these problems away, and this bridge will do that. We're in the process, and I see the bridge as kind of a three-legged stool along with the rail and along with the port, and those will all function on their own, but together the economic value is going to be much greater. And I'm going to leave it to you guys how to work it out, the corporate structure and everything, but we've been working in good faith. I believe the right-of-way is like 99% complete on the borough side of things. They were working on a little bit of tideland, but we're ready to go, and very hopeful that this is going to tie into two town sites that are being monumented, one of which is going into the platting process very shortly, and we are also building a brand new school complex that's not very far from the north end of that Kubota Bridge project. It'll be the Joe Reddington Junior High School, connected in the same vicinity as the new Denali Elementary School that are going out off of Connect Goose Bay Road. So there's a lot coming together out there that makes that bridge very strategic, and that makes that investment very smart at this time, in my opinion, and I really appreciate your supporting and moving ahead on it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we appreciate your testimony, Mayor, this morning. Don't see any questions, so I think what I'll do, I'm going to jump around the list here a little bit and go now to the Mayor of Anchorage, Mayor Sullivan. Mayor Sullivan, are you with us? Or you were here yesterday, so I don't know where you're at now.
Yeah, actually, back home in Anchorage, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for allowing me to say a few words about this vital infrastructure project. I would echo the thoughts of the previous two speakers. From Anchorage's perspective, we also concur that this is a key piece of infrastructure that would connect the two most populated areas of the state of Alaska, and certainly with the Mat-Su, the fastest growing area in the state. I've heard some folks over the years say that if you build a bridge, people will move to the valley. And as we've seen, people are moving to the valley anyway. And what we need to do now is provide them the right infrastructure. So commuting back and forth between Anchorage and the valley is something that can be done more easily, more efficiently. It's interesting that this week we're celebrating the 50th anniversary commemorating the Great Alaska Earthquake, which, of course, as we know, many lives were lost and a great deal of infrastructure damaged. And to think that there would be only one way between the two most populated areas of the state, and if something happened to that route, how many folks would be stranded. Having that other connection, I think, is vital, if for no other reason, just for the public safety concerns. For Anchorage, one of the other considerations we have is that, you know, twice a week, barges come in from our friends at Tote and Horizon to the port of Anchorage, supplying, as we know, over 90% of the goods that come into the state. And a great deal of that truck traffic is actually heading north, but they have to go through downtown Anchorage before they can access the Glen Highway and start their commute to the north with their commodities. And with the bridge, all of that truck traffic can now access the northern routes without going through downtown Anchorage, and that's significant for the quality of life in Anchorage. I think we all know as well the situation with developable land in the Anchorage Bowl. We're down to, I think, just less than a few percentage points of developable land remaining. What is remaining is mostly steep slopes and deep peat and very hard to develop. And so the cost of development in Anchorage is rising dramatically, which makes it very, very difficult for a new time a home buyer to be able to afford having a house in Anchorage. So there'll be some redevelopment in Anchorage. We certainly encourage that, but at the same time, the opportunity for a young family to access the available land to the north of us via the Kinnickarm Bridge, I think it'd be something that would be of tremendous economic growth potential and also just the social growth that allows families to live and prosper here in South Central Alaska. I can easily envision many folks living over there but working in the Anchorage Bowl and being able to have the ability within the 10 or 15 minute drive to access the workplaces in Anchorage. I think is going to be something that is our future and that we need to plan for it now. This bridge has been on the drawing board, as we know, for over 50 years, and I think there's a point in time where we just have to make the decision to do it. When we look at communities that have built bridges over the last 100 years or so, I can't think of a single community that would ever remove a bridge that they built connecting a populated area to an area with potential, such as we see over there in the Kinnick area. So I give my wholehearted support. I know that there's financing questions remaining, which strategy to use, whether a P3 or a state bonding and TIFIA loan proposal. There's lots of options out there, and I know you'll choose the one that makes the best economic sense for the state, but just in terms of whether we should build it or not, I encourage you to say yes and develop this key piece of infrastructure.
Okay, very good.
And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mayor, and it was good to see you again yesterday when you were down here in Juneau.
Thanks for taking the time, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Thank you.
Don't see any questions, so I think we'll let you get back to running the city there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's continue now with Berkeley Tilton from Wasilla.
Hello. Am I on there now?
Yes, you are, sir.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm right here.
Okay. Proceed with your testimony, and if you could put your name on the record and your affiliation.
Yeah, no problem. My name is Berkeley Tilton. Here in the Wasilla area. I am the past president of the Kinnick Fairview Community Council and also am a current board member. I finally managed to get out of the duties after 9.5 years on it as president. I want to echo the sentiments of the prior speakers, but also speak a little bit to this area here. The Kinnick Fairview Community Council area 10 years ago was 48% of the population it is today, and in the last census is moved up to the point that if it was an incorporated area, would be the fourth largest city in the state of Alaska. The Kinnick Goose Bay Highway goes right through there, and the thought that the bridge would be built just so that some people down in the Point McKenzie area that might work in that area would be the only commuters there, I think, is misthought. There is such a tremendous amount of population here now that would utilize that route, because then they would not have to come 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 miles north to Wasilla to hang around to get around to the Glen Highway. So I really want to stress that there is current population that is ready to utilize it. And from the standpoint of, I know there's been talk that it would probably impact the current federal projects. I am an engineer and have been in road building for the last 40 years in the state of Alaska, and have been with Department of Transportation back in the 60s, but in private construction since then. And I know some of the process here, and I know that there is enough room in the Department of Transportation's budget to be able to allocate funds here and not impact in any great manner the amount of other construction that is needed throughout the state. This is really a prime piece of infrastructure, and as Mayor Sullivan indicated, 50 years in the making, and it's time we chomped down and went ahead and constructed it in the quickest manner and most economically sound manner as possible. Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing me to testify.
All right. Well, we appreciate you joining us this morning, Berkeley, and thank you for your testimony. Okay, I'm going to go on now to Aves Thompson with the Alaska Trucking Association.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Aves Thompson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association is a statewide organization representing the interests of our nearly 200 member companies in Alaska. The ATA has supported the Kinnikum Crossing and Kibata since its inception. We believe that this alternative route provides an important freight link and corridor to enable increasing volumes of freight to be moved safely and efficiently into and out of the Port of Anchorage. This is an important regional link in Alaska's highway system. We believe the public financing approach is a more traditional approach to building transportation infrastructures. And some of those advantages there might be that some lower cost of capital, financing is a little less reliant on toll revenue, and could save us millions of dollars over the long term. While we understand that the trucking industry will not fully realize all the benefits of the Kinnikum Crossing until all of the connector routes are finished, we firmly believe that this project is an essential element in expanding our capabilities to deliver the freight. We believe that this project is an important investment in Alaska's future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you very much, Aves. Appreciate you joining us this morning. All right, Don Dyer with the Mat-Su Economic Development.
Hi, this is Don Dyer. I'm the Economic Development Director for the Mat-Su Borough, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify today. And just a few items for your consideration. I did a presentation to the House Economic Development, Transportation, and Tourism Committee back on February 25th, and the title of that presentation was the Port McKenzie Enterprise Zone, Alaska's Link to Economic Certainty. And in that presentation, I highlighted about the four key projects that would synergize in the Port McKenzie area, which are the Kinnikum Bridge, Port McKenzie, the Port McKenzie Rail Extension, and the ASAP Pipeline Project, and then about eight other enterprises that are currently there working, and how the sum of all these enterprises working in that area creates a big opportunity for not only the Mat-Su and Anchorage, but all of Alaska. The main advantage that I see for Anchorage and for the Mat-Su that this bridge turns on is that it will create fluid transportation corridor for workforce for both residents who work in the commute from the Mat-Su to Anchorage, and then also for Anchorage residents to work in the Mat-Su and the industries that'll come online with all of the opportunities in the Port McKenzie area. Like Mr. Tilton pointed out about the Kinnick Fairview area, there's about 16,000 residents there, and just in that west end of the Mat-Su, there's a total of about 30,000 residents, and they would actually be closer. If they wanted to go to Anchorage, it will be closer for them to go through across the Kinnick Arm Bridge than it will to travel the way that they have now. So there's and we have about 20,000 commuters per day that go from the Mat-Su to the to Anchorage and back. There's the Kinnick Arm Bridge opens up that commerce. It takes all of the road traffic off of both the Anchorage streets and the entire corridor going through the longer way through the Mat-Su and through Wasilla, and it would put it on a safer route and take a lot of stress off of transportation corridors that are already overstressed in the Mat-Su. One other thing to consider about this project is we're not only at risk for inflation, like was mentioned before, but also currency risk, because a lot of these infrastructure pieces that would be used to build this bridge would come from foreign countries, and the sooner we purchase those, the less vulnerable we are to currency fluctuations. And as you see in the news lately, there's a lot of geopolitical forces that could cause currency to fluctuate out of our favor. So that's my testimony for you today.
All right, Don, appreciate your testimony. We have a question from Senator Olson, if you can hold on.
Okay,
go ahead, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dyer, as the Director for the Economic Development Area of Mat-Su, have you done any, well, first of all, let me preface this. One of the questions has always been the number of actual crossings that are going across there. There have been numbers that have been fluctuating. They've certainly been called into question. But I guess as the Director of the Mat-Su Economic Development community there, have you done any studies to determine the actual number of bridge crossings that may be out there?
There were studies that were done by Kibata and by our planning department that quantified that. And I know there is a brand new study. I don't know if it's been released or not. I've supplied quite a bit of information for it to Kibata and to the consultants that are doing that study. I don't know the exact number of crossings, but I can tell you this. I take most of the calls for investors that are interested in investing in that area, and with all of the companies that are interested in doing things in that area, it would not take long to create a lot of traffic on that bridge because of all the job opportunities and entrepreneurial opportunities that are out there.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue, I'm looking at a report here that shows that the Kibata's numbers were 14,337, while the Mat-Su Borough Plan that you just alluded to, the department, show only 4,515. How do you rectify those numbers, or do you rectify the numbers, Mr. Dyer?
I would. I don't know which report you're looking at exactly, but if it's I'd be wanting to see what the most current numbers off of that report that was being put together by Kibata this last summer. I don't know if they've released that report yet or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If you're talking about the report that was done a few years ago, I'm not sure how correct those numbers are, as I've talked internally, and also I think those were based on different assumptions than what I'm seeing in the marketplace right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, great. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. All right, let's see. Let's go to Michael Droege.
Hello,
Michael. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much for having the opportunity to be here today. I'm Michael Droege. I'm the immediate past president of the Alaska Association of Realtors. and we have in the past and do currently advocate for the construction of this bridge for a multitude of reasons. Many of you saw the article that was sent down regarding the land situation in Anchorage, and so I'd like to address a couple of those issues and dovetail on a couple of the other speakers. First of all, for us, we see that there hasn't been a significant infrastructure project in terms of roads built since 1970 or thereabouts. Affordable housing in the Anchorage market is detrimental to both homeowners and renters because of the lack of affordable available land. We can calculate that there's probably about 300 affordable available building sites between Anchorage and Chugach. As Mayor Sullivan indicated, most of the land that's left over is very difficult to develop. I can give you one real-life example. Recently, I sold a lot to someone who wanted to build in Eagle River. We encouraged him not to buy the lot because it was very difficult to develop. He paid $100,000 for the lot, and it cost $60,000 to improve that lot and move the groundwater away from the foundation and septic location before we could even build this home. It is a 1,700-square-foot ranch, and in the finished product will be over $450,000. So that's the reality of the kind of land that we have, and that affects not only home ownership but rental rates. In Anchorage, the average cost of a home is $344,507. This is MLS statistics ending in December of 2013. The factor of land in that cost is 42%, because the average city water and sewer lot in Anchorage costs $145,000 for 7,500 square feet. So you would think in a land that has 586,000 square miles of land, we wouldn't have a lack of land for housing, but in this particular instance, we do. We also believe that this is an important public safety issue, providing a second way in and out of Alaska's largest economic center. It will take significant traffic off of the park's highway, and we just believe that it is time, just because of our industry's need for land and, you know, our charges in the Alaska Association of Realtors and also the National Association of Realtors, is to protect private property rights and promote affordable home ownership. And this is the only significant way we can do that. We have done some redevelopment, and I've been involved in several projects in existing neighborhoods of taking an older home, tearing it down, and building a new home in that area. And while that's a possibility, it doesn't alleviate any costs, because the land is still valued what the land's valued, so that's just a matter of space. We also think that renters cannot afford to commute to more affordable housing, because if they can get more affordable housing in Chugach or Palmer or Wasilla, the cost of commuting back and forth to the jobs that they have in Anchorage or nearby is not affordable. So the Alaska Association of Realtors, the Anchorage Board of Realtors, and the Mat-Su Board of Realtors support the bonding and building of this bridge. We believe that the traffic numbers that Senator Olson talked about are wildly fluctuating, but if we consider how much of the traffic goes over the Juneau Douglas Bridge, reported at about 9,500 cars a day, stands to reason with 10 times the population base in the Anchorage Bull, that 4,000 cars a day doesn't even seem reasonable. But if it were only 10,000 cars, I'm no expert, but I've done the math, it would appear that we could service the debt with about a $7 round trip each way. That's only 10,000 cars. But I would estimate, just logic says to me, that there will be a whole lot more traffic than that. We completely support this project. The sooner the better. We don't have any land left to build on, and we would just envision in the next 10 years seeing a community like Eagle River just 4 miles across the water as a huge economic development for our whole state's economic viability. So that is my testimony.
Very good. Thank you, Michael. Thank you for joining us this morning. Okay, I'm going to go to Anchorage LIO, James Kenworthy. Are you available, James?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to call the committee's attention to Section G of page 10 of the Bond Reserve Fund. The language in your bill states that the legislature may appropriate funds to the Bond Reserve Fund when the Department of Revenue Commissioner certifies each year how much the bond payments will be. this is basically is dependent on the toll revenue, and the language is basically a standard moral obligation of the state in which it really is going to be shall appropriate, because the choice you're going to have with a shortfall of toll revenue is you'll have a state agency, CABADA, either defaulting on its obligation, or the legislature will have to essentially have an unlimited guarantee each year to replenish the bond payments, replenish the fund to make the state bond payments and the proposed TIFIA bond payment, a loan, of course, a TIFIA that they've been turned down six times. So let me go through the waterfall of what would happen to the revenue. The first choice of the revenue, as Devin Mitchell said, is operations and maintenance. So the first use of toll revenue is that, because you have to protect the value of the asset. The second use of the revenue would be to repay the proposed TIFIA loan that they haven't gotten. And if you look at the term sheet for the TIFIA loan program, and we posted the loan agreement on the Knickbridge Facts website last night, it requires basically the two national rating firms have given investment grade to the project, and it perplexes me how that would be possible unless the state directly pledges its credit. And then, of course, whatever money left over would pay for the state bond issue, but there won't be. So, in effect, the legislature, you, are warranting the projections of toll revenue. And, of course, since the audit last year, there are no new numbers. So you're warranting numbers you haven't seen. There are latest numbers on the bridge. They were done by HDR, who's also a CABADA contractor. But they were doing the Wasilla Bypass study. And this is the last forecast that took 2010 census data of people and jobs, put them in neighborhoods or traffic analysis zones, and then modeled that using existing traffic counts. And the number they have for crossing the bridge in 2035 is 9,400 trips vehicles a day. CABADA's last number is 36,000 trips a day. Now, that 26,600 trips a day, just to give you an idea of the sensitivity of the financing of this project to toll revenue, the difference of 26,600 trips a day in 2035 is $250,000 a day. That's $90 million in that year. So when you have a number that's 76, and at Point McKenzie, whereas CABADA's last number, as Senator Olson said, was 13,000 in jobs at Point McKenzie taking two TAS zones. If you just look at the Point McKenzie TAS zones, CABADA last had 10,455 jobs at Point McKenzie. HDR latest numbers is 1,249. So CABADA's numbers are eight times the latest HDR numbers. And their recent DOT says that's misleading because the number was a bypass number, not a regional forecast. But no one else has used 2010 census data and modeled it to latest traffic counts as HDR. I think it's a good number. Now, the last CABADA number for the cost of the project was $1.6 billion. That's the number in the audit. And the reason it was $1.6 billion and not the $894 million you see in your one-page financial summary is that it had to include the cost of Phase 2, which is a four-lane bridge and four-lane approach roads. And the reason they had to have the higher cost is they had already included the revenue from what had to be four lanes. Because you can't get over 20 or 22,000 trips a day over more on a two-lane restricted highway. Right now, the Glen at Aklutna Flats, the boundary between Mat-Su and Anchorage, is 30,000 trips a day. But your one-page summary, all previous plans from CABADA have included the revenue from four lanes of traffic, but only the cost of a two-lane bridge, an absolute impossibility. So I think the committee needs to ask CABADA and the Department of Transportation, is the revenue that you're counting on to pay the TIFIA bond and the state bond, is it more than 20,000 trips a day for any year in before the bonds paid off? And I think that you should see a list of the traffic volumes required to pay off the bonds. That's like standard financial information, and it should be provided to the committee before you make this kind of unlimited commitment. Now, according to the Department of Labor, the growth rate for the Mat-Su borough is 2.35% from the hard number of the 2010 census to July of last year. That extrapolates to 155,000 people in 2035. Yes, the borough is the fastest growing region of the state, but the number from ICER last number and the Department of Labor, they estimate 170,000 trips a day. It's on 170,000 people living in the borough in 2035. But even the HDR number counted on 172,000 people. Cabada's number was over 200,000 and not documented per the audit. So you're not going to have the growth of people to pay for the trips.
Hey, James.
So,
James, I'm going to have to ask you to summarize.
Where's the traffic volume that's
James,
going to pay off the bonds?
James,
you
I apologize.
You have to reduce take at least $1 billion of projected toll revenue from a financial plan you don't see because it's not there, or you have to add $500 million to the cost of building a four-lane bridge and four-lane appropriate.
Okay, James, you've exceeded your time. We do appreciate your comments, and we understand there is a question on the number of people who would use the bridge, and we're going to sort through that. So I appreciate. Yeah, why don't you, if you had more comments, just send us an email so we can read the rest of your testimony. But we do have other folks who want to testify, so I'm going to have to continue on. But thank you. Let's go to Stephanie now. It's Stephanie Kessler. And again, if you can leave your, try to keep your comments to about 3 minutes so that we can get to everyone, we'd appreciate that. Stephanie?
Thank you. My name is Stephanie Kessler. My testimony is going to address two major areas, the project's financial analysis and is the Kinnick Arm Crossing a wise use of our funds. In terms of the financial analysis, the Kinnick Arm Crossing is a $1 billion project. Where are the cash flow analyses? What are the timelines of the bond payments, the toll revenue collections, TIFIA payments, etc.? How can we possibly make an informed decision without these detailed analyses? Where are the new demographic numbers? Why haven't these numbers been released? They were originally scheduled for release in September, then December, then January, and then last month. They still have not been released. How can we, as a state, assume a financial burden of this size without new and potentially more accurate data? How can we trust a project whose publicly stated cost is $900 million, but privately the cost is admitted to be $1.6 billion, in order to build out that four-lane bridge to account for the four lanes of revenue? Is it realistic to expect $226 million in new highway funds above and beyond our current federal highway funds, particularly when the expectation is that federal highway funds will be reduced nationwide as a result of the Federal Highway Authorization Bill? Cabada has been turned down 6 times for a TIFIA loan. It is extremely unrealistic to expect that a TIFIA loan will be granted to this project. Is the Kinnick Arm Crossing a wise use of our funds? $300 million in state revenue bonds are proposed. In a January Department of Revenue presentation to the legislature, it was stated that the state has a $1 billion to $1.5 billion remaining in bond capacity before we lose our AAA rating. Do we want to suck up one quarter to one third of that bond capacity on just a single project? A project with extreme financial risk and very limited statewide benefit. With falling revenues, money is at a premium. The state can only afford one major project. Is the Kinnick Arm Crossing really more important than the gas line? Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you for your testimony, Stephanie. Bob French, also there at the Anchorage LIO.
Thank you. My name is Bob French, and these comments are my own. I've been following the Kinnick Arm Bridge for over 10 years now, and I would like to actually have my testimony be considered as invited testimony, just because I think that it's improper to have so much time given to ProBridge testimony that doesn't have any real financial discussion in there.
Well, sir, you're more than welcome to send us your comments if you need more than the 3 minutes. But yeah, we're trying to limit the public testimony to 3 minutes. So go ahead and proceed with your comments, Mr. French.
Okay, thank you. Since this is for the Finance Committee, I'd like to try to get this back to actual finances. You've got a one-page document in front of you to review. Kubota, in their past bills, they have had hundreds of pages of pro formas with estimates to give you how much it's going to cost to pay off those TIFIA loans, and provided year-by-year estimates of the differences between those required payments and the estimated toll revenues, as well as the estimated drains on the reserve fund and how much the state is going to have to be putting into that reserve fund to make up for that lack of toll revenues. It's interesting that your packet doesn't include a fiscal note to estimate the potential cost to the state. How could Senate Finance make this decision without that information? I realize Jeff Otteson from the State Department of Transportation testified last week that his estimate was that they would only need 10,000 daily trips. You've heard testimony saying that the Wasilla Bypass is estimating 9,400 trips in 2035. What happens when the 9,400 trips are not enough to pay off the TIFIA loans? Are you ready to gamble with the state's credit rating? Do you think that the Fed somehow are not going to either reduce transportation funding for the rest of Alaska or require some other refinancing for that TIFIA loan after not being paid year after year after year? Let's not forget that at least 3 toll projects have gone bankrupt and more have needed to be refinanced based on the toll revenue forecast being done by Kubota's toll forecaster, CDM Smith. So what happens if Kubota doesn't get a $341 million TIFIA loan to cover one-third of their costs? Mr. Mitchell testified last week that without the TIFIA loan, the project wouldn't go forward. If that's true, why is there no mention of TIFIA in this committee substitute? If that's true, why would there be any objection to making it clear that without a TIFIA loan, the state allocations for this project will be held until the TIFIA loan comes in? If Kubota's turned down for the 7th time in their application for this TIFIA loan, the state costs will certainly jump much higher than $600 million. I'm an engineer, and I understand that the cost estimates at a 35% level, which is where Kubota is, are very loose, shall we say. You've got cost estimates that range anywhere from $700 million to $1.62 billion. You're trying to make financial decisions on a cost where you can't even, where the cost variances are more than 2. I think really this bill needs to be either held until you have adequate financial data, or you actually can amend this bill to show that it is not going to injure the state. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. French. And we are not going to move the bill today, and we are still waiting for some new revised fiscal notes. So, we appreciate your comments and your concerns. Let's go on now to Jeff Stark. I think Jeff just lists questions. Attorney General's
yes,
office?
Yes, Senator Meyer. This is Jeff Stark. I'm with the Attorney General's office, and I had just signed in to indicate that I was available for questions, but I had no prepared testimony.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeff. Okay, still there in Anchorage, Lois Epstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lois Epstein, and I am a licensed civil engineer in Alaska, and I live in Anchorage. I am the former director of the Alaska Transportation Priorities Project, a transportation watchdog organization. On April 6th of last year, very close to the end of the legislative session, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee issued its report on Kubota with the following recommendation, quote, Kubota management should revise traffic and toll revenue projections to address deficiencies. It goes on to say, Overstated traffic volume in Kubota's modeling process has the effect of overstating projected toll revenues, end quote. I do not understand how this committee, the Finance Committee, can move forward without these new projections. It does not matter that the old financial plan, which relied on a public-private partnership, is now defunct, except to the extent that Kubota spent years paying expensive private consultants to promote the P3 approach, an approach that should have been rejected years ago. Kubota needs to produce revised and credible traffic and toll revenue projections before this Senate committee moves this bill. Otherwise, the committee would be completely ignoring an important LBNA analysis. Additionally, as someone who has worked on transportation issues for many years and who served on the AMATS Technical Advisory Committee, I follow federal transportation law closely. What Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Jeff Addison did not tell you when he was before you last week is that the federal transportation law expires October 1st, and the new law may reduce federal funding to states dramatically. It's true that TIFIA loan money may increase some, but that represents a relatively small amount of federal transportation funds. And given that this bridge is still characterized in D.C. as a quote-unquote bridge to nowhere, especially when bridges in Minneapolis and Washington State literally are falling down, it's highly unlikely that this project will receive a low-cost TIFIA loan. So that tells you that Kubota's financial plan should not be believed. I also want to comment on Jeff Addison's analysis that a small number of highway projects will be pushed back for a short period. Since the pipeline for transportation projects is continually replenished as infrastructure ages, or as traffic increases, or as design criteria change, some projects will have to be canceled to fund the Kinnickahn Bridge. Those projects could be, for example, the second Eagle River Bridge on the Glenn Highway. We only have funding for one direction at the present time. New ferries could be canceled, the Wasilla Bypass now in the planning stages, or other needed highway projects. I will end by letting you know of a report I released today entitled Easy to Start, Impossible to Finish 3, Alaska Spends Millions on Roads, Bridges, and Energy Development Studies Without the Financial Resources to Complete the Projects. I think that's the secret that a lot of folks in the legislature know but don't want to admit. Each of your offices will receive a copy. The bottom line is that the state has in hand only 8% of the approximately $17 billion needed to complete 10 transportation and energy projects currently planned, and that's not including the greatly increased cost to the state for the gas line project under SB 138. The report also shows that state debt service would nearly quadruple if all of the projects were pursued. The state needs to make choices, and this project does not warrant pursuing. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify.
All right. Thank you, Lois, for your testimony. Okay. I believe there's one more yet in Anchorage. Scott Goldsmith.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Goldsmith. I'm a retired professor of economics. I've worked for 37 years at the University of Alaska Institute of Social and Economic Research. I'm testifying today as an individual. And my concern is with the state's fiscal health. This year we have a $2 billion shortfall in the general fund, and we're currently drawing down our cash reserves at the rate of about $7 million a day. We don't yet seem to realize the path we're on and where it is taking us. As a retiree, I'm concerned that unless we get our fiscal house in order, I will soon lose my dividend and be forced to start paying income and sales tax. I'm concerned that a fiscal crash will lead to an economic crash that will cut the value of my house in half. I'm concerned that my children may be unable to find jobs in Alaska and be forced to leave the state. And the more I learn about the cost, financing, and so-called benefits of this project, the more concerned I become. Now is not the time to take on new obligations that require the state to write blank checks. One blank check of up to $450 million if bridge tolls fail to repay $300 million in new state tax debt. A second blank check of unknown amount to repay the TIFIA loan if bridge tolls fail to cover that obligation. A third blank check of unknown amount to cover the cost of connector road upgrades to access the bridge on both ends. A fourth blank check of unknown amount to cover the cost of potential cost overruns on bridge construction. A fifth blank check of
of unknown amount to cover the cost of bridge expansion from 2 to 4 lanes. A sixth bank check for the highway to pay for the highway projects we won't be able to fund because of the diversion of federal highway funds to this project. And finally, a seventh blank check just to keep this project on life support, even if it eventually expires. How can we evaluate the so-called benefits of this project unless we know the potential ultimate cost? Project proponents tell us not to worry and assure us the project actually will be generating enough toll to pay for other road projects around the state. But no bank would write a check based on assurances without analysis, and it would be irresponsible for the state to do so, particularly as we face a future of growing deficits. Unfortunately, we have no credible project analysis against which to measure the toll projections of project advocates or to evaluate the financing proposal. Last year at this time, an audit requested by the legislature concluded, and I won't quote because we've already heard that from Lois, they recommended Kubota management should revise traffic and toll revenue projections to address deficiencies. Subsequent to publication of that audit, Kubota hired a consulting firm to conduct an independent peer review and update socioeconomic data used in the Kinnikum Crossing traffic and toll revenues projections. In a press conference announcing the study, Kubota stated, and I quote, "It is important to periodically update this information as time passes and new facts become known." Time has passed. The final report of that peer review was due September 20th, 2013, but 6 months later, it has still not surfaced. The Alaska partner in the preparation of that report, Agnew Beck, is a well-known and respected planning firm. They would not be 6 months late on a three-month contract. We can only speculate on why we don't have that study in front of us today. The bottom line is that there's no new information today to address and evaluate the concerns raised by the legislative audit a year ago. Why are we even here today trying to make policy based on a foundation of known discredited information? Thank you.
All right, Scott, thank you for your testimony. We have questions, Scott. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have questions, but if you have your testimony in writing, I wonder if you could provide that to my office.
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question.
Okay. Senator Olson has a question for you, Scott.
Mr. Goldsmith, with your credentials, you certainly gained the respect of many of the people down here as well as across the state of Alaska. What are the more accurate numbers that you would tend to put, go ahead and put confidence in for us to look at so we can look at this from a public policy as well as a more objective perspective?
Senator, I haven't done any analysis of this project in the last couple of years, and my concern, I guess, is based on the absence of the response to the audit and what I've heard today, that the wide range of variation in assertions, if you will, of what the expected use of the bridge might be. And that just leaves me very troubled.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Senator Wilson and Scott. Scott, I think we'd all enjoy a copy of your testimony. I think the 7 points you brought up are something that the committee is going to want to address in more detail. Okay, let's move on now to back to the MATSU. Hopefully we still have these folks online. I believe it's Ron Arvin, who's a member of the MATSU Assembly. Oh, there he is. Oh, sorry. You're here in Juneau. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Sorry about that, Ron.
My name is Ron Arvin. I'm on the MATSU Borough Assembly, and I appreciate this opportunity to address the body. So I'm in agreement with the testimony that's been raised today in support of this initiative. And rather than mash through, the testimony is quite similar to my own. I'd like to point out something that we've done at the local level. There's been some discussion about whether or not the MATSU is actually ready for this connectivity. Well, We go through planning in the Mat-Su, but not just for the exercise of planning. We've thought this through. Under Mayor DeVilbiss's initiative, we've created the Kinnick Town site. We've presented two collector and arterial road bond packages to the public that passed for connectivity between the Parts Highway and KGB. There's some Burma connectivity that ultimately will need to happen once the traffic really begins to increase. We've got an 8,500 acre port district. We've redone the port master plan. It's going through additional rework today in anticipation for additional businesses setting in the port district. We've got a lot of discussion that has broad public support that you've heard today, not only statewide with the Conference of Mayors and others, but in our own community, there's an overwhelming support for the bridge to be installed. And, you know, it's important that when you talk about a bond or TIFIA or P3, those are very dynamic discussions that you are subject matter experts over. You're having people that are subject matter experts come and testify to you about that. At the end of the day, how this project is funded, you'll decide. But my testimony today is we are ready for the bridge. We have had substantive discussions over several years about it. Many years ago, I was on the Point McKenzie Port Commission for several years. I was on the Transportation Advisory Board for the Mat-Su Borough for several years. And the bridge has always been part of the overarching discussion about connectivity across the inlet. I commute every day in my day job between the Valley and Anchorage, and it's running the gauntlet 4 out of 5 days of the week during the winter. There are accidents, and when there is the slightest disruption, even an officer pulling somebody over for speeding, it's stopping thousands of people dead in their tracks for miles on end. And a lot of that traffic is coming from the upper reaches north of Wasilla and KGB and that connectivity. And so I implore you, I appreciate you taking a look at this. It's easy to say no, and I think the 28th legislature has an opportunity when some years later it's looked back on, was that opportunity seized or was that opportunity let go by? It's never going to be less costly than today to build it. And in the future, there will be discussions, should it not be built, about the need for it. And there's often discussion about, if we'd only done this back then, we wouldn't have these congestions or overcrowding or residences that are built too close to one another or schools situated in the wrong spot. It's because there wasn't, I think, sometimes a look into the future. This is a look into the future regarding connectivity for traffic, and I'm telling you, we're ready for this bridge in the Mat-Su Borough. Thank you very kindly.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And as you know, having driven the Glen Highway, it sounds like frequently that the Glen Highway needs a lot of work and repair as well. And if you continue with that type of volume of traffic, it's going to be an ongoing expense to the state just repairing the Glen Highway. And I think we heard too from the Deputy DOT Commissioner that they're looking at almost spending $600 million just to widen the Glen Highway. So, and the bridge does give you another access, as you said, because if there is an emergency on Glen Highway, then everything stops pretty much as far as in and out of Anchorage to the Valley. So, questions, Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron, I want to make sure I heard what you said, because one of my concerns is not building the bridge, but and people are going to use it, but how do you diverge the traffic when it gets over there? And that's always been a question of mine. Did I hear you say that under your updated transportation plan, you're looking at a Burma Road connector?
No, sir, through the chair. So ultimately, the logical conclusion is that from Point McKenzie Road to connectivity to the Parks Highway, much along the same alignment as the rail, but not in the same alignment, that Burma through Big Lake will ultimately need to be connected for traffic to the interior.
Okay, very good.
And what we are doing, sir, at the local level is we're upgrading Vine and a couple other small arterial roads that where you start to merge into Wasilla and you've got traffic coming from the north, you'll be able to sweep onto Connect Goose Bay Road rather than going clear into Wasilla. So that's a temporary fix until ultimately down the road Burma can be realigned.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Bishop. Additional questions, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Arvin, I guess I missed what you were part of, that you served on the Matsubara Planning Commission?
No, sir. I was on the Matsubara Point McKenzie Port Commission.
Port Commission.
And I was also on the Matsubara Transportation Advisory Board some years ago, which led into my running for the Matsubara Assembly.
Continue, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator Olson.
As you looked at that, I'm assuming you had nothing to do with the, or didn't take into consideration, or weren't involved, was not involved with the Goose Creek Prison project over there that went millions and millions of dollars over budget?
I was not, sir. That predated my time on the Assembly.
Okay. And if you you talked about the opportunity being seized, certainly was there, and you're well aware that there was a bridge, or there was a road that was to Nome and was surveyed back in the 40s. If we'd have done that, we'd have been broke as a state by now, because it was done in the territorial days. And so I guess I question that opportunity being seized there. But here's my real question. As you talked about some of the issues of, I guess your words were, if some vehicle is stopped for whatever reason by the police, he stops traffic for miles and miles. Wouldn't you say that's even more so on a two-lane traffic, on a two-lane bridge that's going across the way?
Through the chair, sir, what my point was is that if you've got traffic that is using two arterials as opposed to one, then the current part of the current Glen Highway is not going to be so overburdened with that traffic stacking, because a lot of that traffic's going down KGB and onto the bridge. That was my point, sir.
Mr. Chairman, as you look at that situation there, don't you agree, though, that it would be harder to go ahead and clear up an accident if there was indeed something that went across the bridge that was only two-lane versus something like that's gone the Glen Highway?
Well, we have some emergency services oversight at the Assembly, but I'm sorry, that's not my expertise.
Let me just put it into context, Mr. Chairman. As a helicopter pilot that flies search and rescue up at the North Slope, I find it a lot easier to go ahead and, if there was an accident, to go ahead and land on the road, even if it is disrupting traffic. And I don't think there's any provision to go and land any helicopter. If you've got to medevac somebody off a bridge that was there that has an accident, you'd be in dire straits to get them out of there with a helicopter, and realizing that. And I bring that up because the mayor of Anchorage, Dan Sullivan, pointed out that if for some reason you have two arterials that are going someplace, and if you do have an earthquake that comes along and ties up the Glen Highway so it breaks out or interrupts traffic there, I would say that it's going to be far worse for any bridge that goes through any kind of an earthquake. And we've seen those bridges that have fallen both on the on the fault down in San Francisco, as well as the bridge that just wore out there in Minneapolis a couple of years ago. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, there's a lot of speculation about natural disasters, I'm sure, and calamities that would ensue. But with the design standards that are instituted today and structures like that in that environment, I think that we are on the right track.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Olson. Okay. Thank you, Ron, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay, we'll go back then to Offnet, I believe, in Matsu is Mayor Vern. Let's see if I can put on my glasses. Rupright, am I saying that right?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Senator Meyer and members of the committee. This is Mayor Vern Rupright, City of Wasilla.
All right, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, sir. Just a few comments. As the committee, or most of the committee members, are aware, Wasilla has always been a strong advocate of the bridge. back in 2009, we brought the injunctive relief with the city of Houston to keep this project alive, because we're of the opinion that the bridge is a strategic avenue or corridor for not only economics and commerce, but also for defense of the state. We also know that the George Parks Highway, once it was designed and built in 72, things have grown so rapidly out here that now we have three safety cars in the Wasilla area, and there seems to be no let-up. A second avenue and a car in and out of Anchorage to help alleviate this traffic grid would be most helpful, plus the commerce thing. We have that rail spur marching forward to that port. With the rail spur coming down there, there's going to be a tremendous amount of traffic, hopefully, and the economic bringing product into the state and shipping product out of the state. The bridge would just make absolute sense on the connectivity between that and the Port of Anchorage and the largest city in the state as it is right now. I'm looking at, and I have been reading Senate Committee Substitute on this bill, version R this morning, and this is a fairly good work draft for the committee to put their minds around and put their ability in the financing piece around. It's a good starting point. I think it probably is going to need a little bit more work, and I understand that you have an incredible burden upon now to decide where these dollars go. I know as a municipal manager for the city of Wasilla, we're also wrestling with PERS and TERS. So it looks like a lot of things are in the mix, and I understand the reticence of some people not to go forward with an investment like this. However, I do believe that with this working draft you have now, it's fiscally and financially responsible. And based on a little bit more information, and perhaps sometimes you just have to have a little faith in the project and a little faith in the future of your state. Because with the port down at McKenzie being a deep water port, as we've shown back in 2010 with the deep draft coal ship, the economic opportunities are huge for the state, and an additional avenue of commerce connectivity, which is also a defense connectivity for the state, I think is a necessary piece of infrastructure. I mean, I often sometimes tell the anecdotal story of my dad, who was a member of 1281, the Carpenters Local, and it was about 38 or more years ago, and I was 25, so you can do the math, and I'm almost 63, so there's going to be a bridge there. And I said, Dad, not in your lifetime, probably not mine. Well, I'm reaching my 63rd birthday, and with the growth I've watched in the state, and it has fluctuated because of what happened to us in the 80s, this is something that inevitably will come. But and I understand the job's on you, it's incumbent upon you to balance this budgetary problem. But I think where there's a will, there's a way, and we're going to know soon enough, especially when that rail spur is developed at Point McKenzie, the necessity of a bridge. As another interconnectivity between the Mat-Su, which is the second largest area of the state now, and the city of Anchorage. I'm open to any questions if anybody has one.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Seeing and hearing none, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. That's all I have online. Is that... That's it. Okay. There's been some folks joining us here in Juneau. Did anybody want to testify before we close public testimony? Okay. Why don't you come on up? And then if you could sign up so we get your name.
Yes, Mr.
Gentleman's name there. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Paul Foose, and I'm a project manager for the Fairview Business Association. And I'd say that this is a project that it probably needs to be built. However, we're right in the area where it's going to land when we come into Anchorage, the Gamble-Ingra interface, and our businesses don't look at a person in a car as the enemy. They're a potential customer if it's done right. Now, we've done quite a bit of work recently on transportation in the area, looking at the redevelopment of Gamble Street, and we've got some ideas for how this interface could happen. We know eventually it's supposed to tie into highway to highway, but that's been put off till 2035. So what's the plan? Each time we have approached Kibata, we've been rebuffed, and they told us, well, our EIS ends at 3rd Avenue. Well, that's just unacceptable. So I'm not speaking against the bill. I would just say if you move this forward, we'd appreciate if you could get a message to Kubota that they need to work with the communities in the area that this project is going to go through so that we come out with something positive that's going to benefit everyone and that everyone can support. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Paul? Question? Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fenis, what other issues have the has the Fairview business community been dealing with besides the Kubota issue?
Well, you know, H2H, eventually what will happen there. We've also, you know, just been looking at redevelopment of that whole area, some tax abatement issues with the community, and we've also got a real substantial problem with chronic inebriates in the area. So we're really trying to lift the whole community up, but transportation is a key piece. It always is a key piece for any area.
Last question, Mr. Chairman, has to do with you use the word being rebuffed by the Kubota personnel. What do you think the reason is?
I don't know. Maybe it's a matter of timing. Maybe they think it's too early to engage us. But, you know, I mean, you've got to, it seems there's been a lot of planning done on the Mat-Su side, but when we try to do something on the Anchorage side, we haven't been able to get anywhere.
Mr. Chairman, that seems to be a growing theme that I've heard about the people on from Government Hill that have been quote-unquote bullied by the Kubota people as they try to go ahead and take over or threaten to take over a property that's there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any additional questions for Mr. Foos? Seeing none, thank you for joining us today. Okay, I think there was one more gentleman. Why don't you come up? I know you're signing in, but we'll just go ahead and take you since you're here, sir. If you could, since I don't have your name, if you could give us your name and affiliation, please.
Yeah, Roger Purcell, past mayor of City of Houston, president of Houston Chamber of Commerce, business owner, 50-year resident of Alaska. Some of you might know I was with Mayor Ruprecht myself were the two that took on the city of Anchorage when they tried to mothball the Kinnick Bridge a few years back and won that suit to make sure that the bridge kept on the short-term plan. I'd like to do a little history in Houston. In 1972 was our first comprehensive plan. My father was involved in doing this plan, and that included the Kinnick Arm Bridge coming across along with the rail spur, which we are now building at this time, going all the way down to Port McKenzie. It also includes a commercial route from the Parks Highway paralleling the rail tracks all the way down, which would be 32 miles to the port. With the bridge going in to my house in Houston, we'd be less than a 40-minute drive to downtown Anchorage, opening up literally tens of thousands of acres of land all through for Anchorage to have new homes, new businesses. In the city of Houston, recently we're annexing another 2,000 acres, and we're also doing heavy industry. We have companies all the way from Detroit now that are actually getting ready to come up and build factories in our area and employing people. We have the, in the Port McKenzie area, we have the oil tanks going in case Flint Hills closed down. We'll be able to, with the rail spur, to be able to store enough fuel in that to ship up north. Got a unique situation here, I think, because it won't be so bad if it shuts down because we may be able to get fuel kind of a little cheaper at that time. But the key here is the jobs it's going to open up. It's going to open up thousands of jobs, not just with the bridge, but with the rail spur, the opening up of the mines, the heavy industry, the 14 miles of industrial land that's being developed. We have a 2-mile-long roundabout rails track that they can unload the materials and never stop. In the city of Houston, we have double tracks being built now that are 2 mile long, so unload and unhook the rails cars that continue on and then they go down to the port. Something people aren't looking at, and that is the jobs it's going to create in the port. Whether the bridge goes in or not, we are the fastest growing population in the state. Kinnick Goose Bay, Meadow Lakes, Houston, Big Lake, Willow has over 60,000 people already. That is who the bridge will turn around and do now. It's not a couple thousand people, it's 60,000. You have a new prison that is almost at 100%. They're driving those prisoners 95 miles to court in Anchorage where they're holding court daily and back again. They're missing court dates. they'd only be a 20-minute drive from the prison to the courthouse when the bridge is done. As I look at this group, and I look back since 1972, how many billions have you spent in the past legislators on studies? How many billions are sitting on shelves collecting dust? You could have built this bridge 10 times over with the studies that you've done. And every year that you wait, every year that you don't build it, it costs that much more, and you stop the economic engine, the greatest economic engine since the pipeline, to the rest of the state of Alaska for opening up the interior for mining, logging, lower cost of freight to all the interior of Alaska. These are the things that you're missing by not moving forward. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Roger, for your testimony. Questions from committee members? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have anyone else here in Juneau? Okay. Paul? Yeah, come on up. And if there's anyone else in the audience that wants to testify, if you could sign up, that's always helpful. Okay, Paul, go ahead, please.
Mr. Chair and the committee, for the record, I'm Paul Grassi, and I'm here to speak in, on behalf of the iron workers of Alaska. The iron workers support this project, and of course, they support it for the jobs, for building, you know, for the jobs in construction. But not only for the jobs in construction, but they believe that there's going to be development on, is it the north side of Kinnick, the Kinnick Arm, that would lead to a great amount of private sector investment, which would lead to jobs that aren't, doesn't need a state involvement, and so they're, you know, they see this as the, as future opportunities for jobs, and you know, I was talking to some. There's other trades that aren't directly affected by the construction, or much by the construction, but they support it too. I was talking to one of my other clients, who's plumbers and pipe fitters up in Alaska, and he was one of the business agents up there was just saying, yeah, we think it's going to lead to incredible amounts of jobs over on the other side. So, you know, they don't have any direct benefit for the bridge construction itself. They see it as an opportunity in the future. But the iron workers also support this for safety reasons. They live in Anchorage. They live in the valley, and so you know, they're concerned about the road closing down. If I could just relay an incident that happened to Paul Carr, who's the business manager for the iron workers. He lives out in the valley, and he was driving to work when both lanes to the Glen Highway were shut down as a result of an accident. Well, to call it an accident is a little bit of a misnomer. It was a crime. It was a high-speed chase, and you know, there was a crash that on one side of the highway, and you know, it went over and crossed over into the other lane, shut down the entire highway, and it did, because it was a crime scene, shut it down for close to 6 hours. He was in his car in the middle of winter for 6 hours, waiting for the, you know, for the clearing. They couldn't back up. They couldn't go forward. So there is some risk, and there is some safety issues involved to have that second corridor. Yeah. So with that, I think I would just, since I know your time is limited, I would close my testimony.
Great. Paul, thank you. Questions, Senator Hoffman?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question is, this project has more to do than jobs. You know, I think that when we had Steve Goldsmith come up And he listed 7 points that basically called a blank checklist and concerns that the state of Alaska may be overstepping its bounds on bonding and the potential of losing half the value of his home and, quite frankly, looking just short of bankrupting the state. Do you think those concerns need to be addressed before we consider the issue that you're talking about, jobs?
I do. Well, this is one of those things where I don't know much about this, but here's my opinion. Situations where I sort of think that we need to, you know, I do see the problem with diminishing revenues, and I for us the big problem is. Is there going to be enough revenue for capital projects and capital budgets? And so that is a concern. However, I do see this as a sort of a creative alternative to just pure general funds for capital projects. Or, you know, this provides some TIFIA, which, you know, it's new, but it looks like a pretty good way of funding projects if it becomes a long-term situation. So I would say this is a creative way of dealing with some of these issues, in the sense that that it does provide some alternative ways of funding projects. The other thing is, I live in here in Juneau, and I know we had a couple of situations where we were doing a roundabout here in Juneau, and the numbers for the bridge, the numbers of crossings in the Juneau-Douglas Bridge came up, and it was between 9,000 and 10,000 crossings per day. Well, you know, it seems hard for me to believe. Again, I'm not an expert, so I don't know the answer to this, but it seems hard for me to believe that there wouldn't be at least 10,000 people, cars crossing or crossings a day, and that particular on that particular bridge.
Okay. Any other questions for Paul? Senator Olson?
I guess since obviously bridges are not your expertise, but you can look at numbers, and you live here in Juneau, and you talked about the 9,500 people that cross the bridge every day. But if you had two bridges, one had a toll, one didn't have a toll, what percentage of those people would go over to Douglas using the toll bridge? It's just a hypothetical situation, but that's to keep it in context, because right now you've only got the one bridge going across. People have no choice but to do that. And so as you look at the idea that they're going to somehow be split, I guess I question that line of thinking. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator Olson. And certainly people who use the bridge or use the highway are going to figure out the economics of saving a gallon of gas versus paying the toll on the bridge. But anyway, thank you, Paul. And thank you, committee members. We'll, was there anyone else here in Juneau who wanted to testify? Nope. Anyone online? Nope. Okay, we're going to close public testimony. Obviously, we heard a lot of good comments on the bill today. A lot of concerns were brought up that we need to, as a finance committee, address. I think Scott Goldsmith, the economist, person who testifies, and we rely on his expertise on a lot of issues, brought up some good points that, again, as a finance committee, we need to address. Certainly, we do want the convenience, I believe, of connecting the two fastest growing communities in the state and giving another alternative to get back and forth. We do like the jobs, but we are concerned about the finances. So we'll hold this bill over for now. I think we are still expecting some new fiscal notes as well. And when we get those and get some questions answered, we can revisit this bill at that time. So we'll set this bill aside for now. Senator Kelly, was there anything you wanted to bring up on the operating budget at this particular time?
introduce probably some amendments tomorrow, but we're not going to go through the full slate of amendments. And a plan, I would imagine, on Thursday for more of the amendment taking and discussion.
Okay. Is there anything else then? I do appreciate committee members. I know we allowed an extra hour on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but I don't see us needing to stay here unless there's more work to be done. There is a press availability that I think Senator Olson and I will be involved with at 11:30. Otherwise, that concludes our work for today. Tomorrow, as Senator Kelly said, we will take up amendments, at least some of them for the operating budget. Thanks, Senator Fairclough. You have Senate Bill 195, post-secondary education loans and grants. And if we have the bill, Senate Bill 104, that dividend bill, if that's ready, we'll bring that up as well. So with that, if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned till tomorrow at 9:00.